You're listening to Sci-Fi for Chicks on Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
Have you been seeing strange things? Things that you can't explain?
We have the ability to see what no one else can. When they lose control, they can't hide. And we see them for what they really are. You are one of the last grips. We need to talk.
Hi, and welcome to Grimly Speaking. This is our second edition of Grimly Speaking. We're covering Season 5. This is the second episode of Grimm for Season 5, the title of which was Clear and Vesson Danger. My name is Maya Aides. I'm joined here with Cammy Suttle.
Hey, how you doing?
Doing awesome. I just finished up my coffee, so. So this one picked up really close to where the last episode ended. They've been doing that. It seems like a lot. There isn't a lot of time between episodes.
Right. In fact, they're kind of pushing the timelines a little bit on the. We'll talk about that in a bit.
Yeah.
But last week we left with baby Kelly arrived. This is Nick and Adeline's baby. And for whatever that's worth. And then Chavez, the FBI agent Chavez, died with a very cryptic message and dramatic death scene. And, you know, what I couldn't understand about that was I could understand why she didn't give information when she was alive. She was being very cryptic. But as she's dying and she knows she's dying, she's still being very cryptic.
Well, I'm going to assume, I don't know, but I'm going to assume that as the story unfolds, that it's because they have a need to keep secrecy, and she may have even on her deathbed not known if she could really trust him or not. I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt there.
I don't buy that one, because she brought him in and she realized she was wrong about him, right?
Yes. Yeah.
She gave him the phone. She gave him, you know, Trouble's chess piece.
Right.
It was hand of the writer. It was just a dramatic scene it didn't need to be that way. But I'm just way too logical.
And then there's also the problem of how much time did she feel like she had. I mean, as she was dying, she was having trouble talking.
That's true.
It was very cryptic. Everything she said was cryptic.
Yeah.
And then it becomes even a little bit more cryptic when you add on the last part of this episode with the, I don't know what she was. I didn't look up what kind of Vesson she was. The Barbara, I think, was her character's name. Betty.
Yeah, we'll talk about Betty in a minute, but you're right. Yeah. They still want to drag us along.
Mm-hmm. I still say that they better tie this into the bank robbery episode from season 3.
It was only on two or three.
Because if this isn't somehow connected with that, then they're really missing out on story building.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of things we talked about last week, too, that they start these great storylines and then they just fizzle out.
Well, not just fizzle out, they just drop it. It never has any resolution. It never comes to fruition. It doesn't have any kind of, finish the story, damn it. It's like when you're like when you're talking to an old person and then they forget the rest of the story.
or me sometimes before I've had coffee.
Yeah. Or just trying to talk to me and I keep changing topics. Yeah. It's kind of like that.
Well, so this week we started out in an accounting office.
Yeah.
Or some kind of banking office or something, and late at night. Of course, all these guys are doing this late at night, right?
Yeah, because that's when all accountants work, is late at night. My husband was watching the episode this morning with me, and he said, yeah, every time they show people working late at night in offices, they're always in there in the semi-dark with most of the lights off. He's like, who works late at night with all the lights off?
That's right. That's so true. Well, you know, what got me about this, of course, the boss finds these accounting errors, and this is where we start the episode. Yeah. And, of course, the geek in the office that's helping him, it's a geek attack, right? So this guy is actually Vesson. Wemlinger is his name. And he's, of course, a great actor because he's calling the cops and he's acting like this little mouse of a guy and scared. And I tried CPR and it's horrible. And who would do this to him?
There was just so much blood.
Yeah. And then we find out later that these accounting, the embezzlement started 2 years ago. Two years ago.
And who doesn't do a background check?
Well, that too. But they he was under an alias. But aside the fact that he could have skipped through on a background check, they haven't audited their own books for 2 years? Come on. I don't know. I find that one, that was like the big faux pas.
Well, that was one of them.
Well, yeah, one of them, because there were some others.
Yeah, yeah. As an overall, I'm trying to like sum up the episode shortly so that we can go into a lot of detail, because I got details, girl.
Okay.
The overall, this week we do have the police, a police case, but it's not Hank and Nick together. It's Hank, and now he's teamed up with somebody who knows nothing about the Vesson World. Pogue. Because his regular partner is on vacation. That's a great excuse for hooking up poor Hank with him. I don't really call this one necessarily the Vesson of the Week story, because the story isn't focused around what kind of Vesson he is or what he's capable of or anything like that. It's just, how do you solve this crime, especially with a partner who doesn't know anything about Vesson,
right,
and not tell him what's going on, but get your job done. You know, that was it. And then, of course, you have the beginnings of the fallout from Chavez dying. You have shoddy police work all around, which is my biggest gripe about this whole episode. And Nick and Adeland very roughly trying to settle in with baby Kelly.
Nick's posse goes back to the warehouse, even though Nick's on vacation. Or is he on vacation yet? I think he is. And they find
He's on forced leave.
Yeah. So they find that this place has been cleaned up pretty spick and span, just like his house was. And of course, there's the black marks that have been painted over. So, so somebody left a message and somebody else came up and painted over it. So there's two things going on here, right?
Yes, yes. You have the gang signs that are being left. And then you have the group that Chavez and Meisner are a part of, or Chavez was a part of.
Well, we think that's them covering it up.
You think it was? Pretty darn sure. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, especially because after they leave, we get the shot of Meisner watching them leave.
That's who that was.
Yeah. That was Meisner watching them leave when they left the warehouse.
Yeah. And he's part of Chavez's group.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. And then we go to Adeland coming home from the hospital after an emergency C-section, the day after, and she's looking pretty good. I mean, she's wearing like normal clothes, and
she's mobile,
got her figure back, and she's mobile. Come on, guys! You know, C-sections do not send you home the day after.
I think those are like a minimum 3 to 5 days, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly. And you're still not going to look that good a day after you've had a baby. So do your homework, writers. We're going to just slam you on that one, because we've both been there, and it just doesn't happen that way.
And maybe it's the hexen in her.
Well, I think somebody should have said, like the doctor said, wow, you're healing so fast, you know, at least given us some excuse so that we all didn't go, what the heck? But she does seem to be questioning her identity again, or, you know, who she wants to become now that she's a mother again. She talked about wondering about where Diana was. You know, this baby has brought a lot of memories back. She seems very sorry about when she hears that Juliet is dead. I mean, she really, truly seems sorry about that. And she's thankful to Nick for taking care of her, because she has nowhere to go. And later in the episode, she even talks about wondering whether she wants to get her powers back or not.
No, she specifically says she does not want them back in any way, but she knows that they will be returning.
So that was kind of an interesting progression for her character, I thought.
Yeah, I did too. And it wasn't, she's, in the last two episodes, well, this episode, because last episode really all she did was scream and labor.
and very well, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, that was one of the things that she said in the conference call, was that if she had known when she went through the delivery scenes with baby Adeline, I mean, baby Diana, what she knew, you know, because she hadn't given birth before she went through those scenes.
Right.
And she said, she goes, I look back on that, and she said, I would have played that much differently.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well. There's always, because hindsight is so 20/20, right?
Well, experience gives you so much more background as an actor. If you actually experienced it, you have so much more,
right?
So much more memory, sense memory that you can rely on, rather than sort of guessing what delivery and labor is like.
Right. So we go on to Hank with his new partner for a minute, Pogue. And I'm with you. You know, they assign this guy who has no knowledge of Vessen. And Hank is one of those specialty detectives. I mean, these are the types of cases that he's going to get.
Right, right.
And Pogue is one of those, he's kind of a very assertive guy. He likes to take charge. And so you
can tell he's really insecure about being placed with Hank, because he keeps saying, you know, did I miss something? You know, because he knows that Hank isn't thrilled about being teamed up with him.
Right.
And he's taking it personally.
Well, I didn't see him as insecure. I saw him as, hey, I need information to do my job, and you should be giving it to me. I saw him as a very assertive kind of alpha guy, and that he can't do that here, which is frustrating.
You know,
obviously, Hank is bringing Nick in. He's going, what's going on? If you're not going to trust me, I'm not going to, you know, this is not going to work. Why is he here? If he were insecure,
those are all valid points.
Yeah, I think his reaction would have been different. It might have been the same questions, but I think his reaction would have been maybe not so much in your face as, you know, I don't know. I feel like
maybe more whiny and less confrontational.
Right, right.
Okay,
because
I gotcha.
He has valid points. I think that he played the character well in the fact that he's right. He needs to have that information to do his job well.
The unfortunate thing is that Hank can't really share all the information with him.
Right.
I mean, how do you even try to broach that subject? I mean, it's an impossible thing to try to bring somebody in on who is completely out of the loop. I thought Hank's line to Captain Renard summed it up so well and summed up the whole problem so well. He said, this job is hard enough when you know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worse when you know that and you can't do anything about it.
Right. Well, they did a good job of portraying that scenario this week.
Yes, I agree.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they promote Wu to detective.
Yeah, why not? I mean, especially with Captain Renard knowing what he knows about Wu and knowing.
Uh-huh.
And let's face it, Wu is, he's done some just amazing stuff, and his tech savvy, between his tech savvy and his powers of observation, and now his knowledge of Vessen, and why not? He's a natural.
Yeah. So they do this whole bring Nick in to watch the interrogation, and he sees this guy Volk, and you know, confirms that he's Vessen, and so they have suspicion, you know, that he's probably the killer, right?
Well, no, they don't have suspicion. They know.
They know. I mean, they know, but they don't have any proof. And
well, yeah, and that was the thing that got Hank. He's like, so we know that he did it, but we can't prove it.
Right. Well, then in walk these marshals who take this guy right out from under him. Now, I don't know about these things, but it seemed funny to me that just because they had a warrant for embezzlement, that trumped his suspicion for murder charge.
I mean, I thought
it wasn't a true charge, but it was like, what? You know, this guy's a murder suspect, and you're just going to go, We don't care. We have a warrant for embezzlement. We're going to take him anyway.
I know. I thought the same thing. But again, I don't know all of the rules and regulations and how the different departments of justice interact and who, you know, I think that their office supersedes and is higher than the Portland Police Department, but I still don't understand how embezzlement trumps murder suspect.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they didn't have any evidence, so he wasn't being charged with anything. He was just under suspicion.
Well, but they were getting in that evidence by virtue of him being, you know, well, and actually these guys coming from the other bureau sort of confirmed that because they were coming to get him for the embezzlement, so that that's what they had to go on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they, you know, these guys should have listened to Nick. Nick tried to warn him. He said, "Hey, this guy's really dangerous," and you know, he looks like Wilbur Milquetoast. You know, these guys are just like, "Ah, yeah, yeah, right, really dangerous. Sure, we, you know, you're trying to do our jobs now." So, you know, they really set them.
Don't bust our balls just because we got babysitting duty.
So, of course, they have to stop for gas. The guy has to go to the bathroom. And, you know, these two guys are, you can just say goodbye to them. But they, when Hank shows up to investigate the murder, he does see that same symbol, that same gang symbol. It's like a four-claw slash in blood on the mirrors. And so he knows this is all connected. You know, we could probably wrap up the rest of the recap here and then take a break and go get coffee.
Yeah.
There's just a couple more things. So they do follow the leads that they get on this guy. They've pinged the accounts that are being
They've got people
padded, working.
Yeah. Right. They've got people working on that. And then Wu, of course, is able to triangulate that every other Tuesday phone call.
Yeah.
To guess where? To Betty.
To Betty. Poor Betty, who was working in the office with the victim and the murderer. And so, of course, we think that she's been coerced, but no, she
really
is...
who thought she was being coerced?
Well, they tried to make us think that. It wasn't very convincing.
I didn't think that for a moment.
Well, no, I mean, she had like 15 racks and like it was like an IT room in her apartment. You know, it was like all these servers.
No, I mean, even before that, I didn't think that she was being coerced because I assumed that they were working together. And
well,
if he's Vesson, then she either knew that he was Vesson and, you know, somehow they were working together. No, she wasn't being coerced.
Oh, well, they tried to make us think that.
I don't know who they were trying to make think, because I failed.
Well, anyway, she deletes a bunch of files. We see a brief glimpse of a picture of Sean Renard on one of those computers before it's deleted. And then she jumps from the upper story window in the apartment, shouting,
"Free the hidden."
Yeah, free the hidden. Occultatum Liberium or something like that.
Yeah.
And,
I'm not up on my Latin.
Well, luckily Monroe is because, you know, he's the one that translated Free the Hidden. And, of course, at the end, I won't get to the end yet because we do have one small scene where the FBI shows up at Nick's house.
Yes.
And they're looking for Chavez. They, you know, they're basically saying, "Hey, you know, you came to our office, you threatened her, you know."
And more shoddy police work.
Right. And where were you last night? That's a good thing that Nick was shuttled back and forth from the hospital a bunch of times. You know, I was kind of complaining about that whole, "Oh, you must go to the hospital. Oh, you must go over here. Oh, you must go back to the hospital." I was like, okay, there was a reason for that now. So,
We'll go to break. Okay, we'll go to break and we'll be right back with our last, our S&M section.
Okay, sounds good.
Sci-Fi for Chicks will be right back.
The fall TV season is upon us, and you know what that means? Recaps. Join us over at scififorme.com as we dive into new shows and new seasons with our unique blend of dry facts and colorful opinions. We talk about the shows and share our analysis, and you're more than welcome to join the conversation. Fall TV is on. Only at scififorme.com, your portal to the science fiction multiverse.
And we're back with the second part of Grimly Speaking, and which we introduce ourselves again. Is that kind of redundant? Yeah, kind of is, isn't it?
Oh, let's be redundant today. I'm Katie.
Okay. Perfect. I'm Maya, and we're Grimly Speaking. Yay! Yeah.
So let's get into the speculations and musings portion of our show.
Okay, is this the part where I get to...
Oh, yes, you get to rant and rave about all that shoddy police work.
Okay, so you remember back when our little dweeb right after he had killed his boss?
Yes.
He spat on the floor. I'm pretty sure there's DNA in that little puddle of spit.
Oh, good one.
Which should tie him directly to the murder.
Well, not necessarily, because he said he gave CPR.
Yeah.
So that, and he said there was blood everywhere. I mean, obviously, he had blood up to his collar. I just thought that was so stupid. It's like, here's this guy with a clean face and neck, and then a bloody collar. That was from CPR?
Yeah.
Really?
Exactly. So that was one of the things that really bothered me, was I just felt like somebody hasn't gone and done their DNA testing of the crime scene.
Right.
And the other thing was, of course, those, you know, the surveillance tapes, the cameras that were in there. And Pogue was like, well, they don't show the back stairs. Yeah, but...
Why wouldn't surveillance tapes show the back stairs? Why wouldn't they have a camera on the back stairs?
Yeah, let's just show the front door where we expect everybody who's actually legitimate to come in. And let's forget about the back door where, you know, if somebody was going to break in, they'd come through.
Right. Yeah, I didn't buy that one either.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and the fact that this guy hadn't really thought through his lie in that, you know, he's saying these two fellows came in, they, you know, they had some sort of a weapon, okay, garden tool, whatever.
Well, actually, he didn't say garden tool. I think he called it a bat or something. He thought it was a bat can tear out somebody's neck like that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I agree. There were some holes in that. Obviously, there should be holes in a lie, but holes in the police work is another thing.
That one bothers me a lot. The other, when I was talking about shoddy police work, the other thing that really bothered me came from the FBI. So if they had gone into Chavez's house and they found evidence of a struggle and everything, when Nick was there, he wasn't wearing gloves. I'm guessing that his fingerprints are going to be found, or should be able to be found, in her residence. The other thing is, it's also all hospitals have surveillance cameras. It's going to be really obvious that he came and went from that hospital over and over again.
Right.
All they have to do is interview any of the staff in the hospital and know that he wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
You can run semi-trucks through the holes in his story.
Well, yeah, but they have to dig deep enough to find those. I mean, on face value, yeah, he's got a new kid in the house. The hospital said, yeah, he was here for the birth, or during the birth, and that's all they did.
Yeah, before you go and confront somebody like that, seems to me you either should have some kind of evidence. I know
exactly.
That he came and confronted her in her office.
Right.
And that probably does make him a suspect in her disappearance.
Sure.
But before you go and accuse somebody, it seems like you really should have done some follow-up before you go into his house and accuse somebody in their house.
Right. So yeah. Where do you think all these bodies are going to?
Oh my gosh, I hadn't thought about that. The mass grave?
Yeah, it's new construction perhaps. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Golly.
And they're, so we have, well, we've got Chavez's group who's painting over all the stuff. Who's cleaning this up? Is this the, it's not
Man,
the resistance.
They have a,
it's
got to
be
great...
the FBI.
No. What? You think the FBI is cleaning up?
I think Chavez's group is cleaning up.
Yeah, which is part of the resistance.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the uprising. What are we going to call
people?
These? The claw people. Yeah, we'll call them the claw people.
Yeah, okay.
Because they want to leave evidence behind. They want to send a message, right?
Right.
So we've got the claw people leaving the message. It's war or whatever, war with whomever, because we're all being very cryptic about what and who is coming.
Yes.
What do you think Trouble's role is in all this?
I don't know, but my assumption is, I mean, we don't know, but we're assuming that she was recruited because she's Grim.
Mm-hmm.
So they are wanting Grim to, as far as we can tell on the show, you know, the history is that Grim take care of Vessen problems. They sort of kill Vessen and then ask questions. It's been their history.
Right.
making Nick very unusual because he usually asks questions first unless there's some kind of clear and imminent danger. Trouble, who has been sort of groomed and trained at least somewhat by Nick, is also different, is, you know, takes more of the stance that he does. Because she also has friends now that are Vess, and she's friends with Monroe and Rosalie. And so they probably got more than they bargained for when they recruited Trouble, because I'm sure they were expecting a Grimm to be a Grimm as a Grimm as a Grimm.
Right. Well, at the end of this episode, we did see Meisner coming out of the what's behind door number one cell.
Right. Go this ahead. Week it sounded more male.
Yes, it did. It sounded a lot deeper and growlier than a female screamer. You know, he says, well, it went better than last time, and he looked like he's been in some kind of a fight.
And he enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, he was enjoying it, so I don't know what they're trying to do there. I still think it might be Juliet behind that door.
I do, too.
And as the, you know, of course, Nick is putting his home up for sale because, as Monroe puts it, get the hell out of here. There's too many... You need a change of venue, man. Too many people know where you live. Too many bad memories and things have happened in this house.
I think it's interesting that it takes bringing in a new baby for somebody to point this out to him.
Yeah, I know.
Dude, there's been a lot of bad stuff go down in your house.
Yeah. Well, and Adeline, about this baby, Adeline does bring up the question that we talked about last week. What's this baby going to be? Is it some kind of...
Yeah.
She had some
funny, that was my favorite part. Words. Yeah. That was my favorite part of probably my favorite bit of the whole episode. What if he's a Hexen Grimm or a Grimm and Hexen?
Yep. She was coming up with that pretty fast, and kind of panicked about it. So it'll be interesting to see what this kid does, what they make of him. As far as gripes go, we've already talked about some of the writing that was just, I don't know, they didn't pay attention to some of these, the holes in the plot or the, just the details that, you know, police work would cover, etc. But again, these fight scenes are so dark and the camera movement is so distracting that why even bother going to trouble on the special effects makeup? Because you're not going to see what's happening anyway. You don't see the characters. You don't see who did what. I mean, every once in a while we see somebody pick up a trash can and throw it. But we don't know what direction it's coming from. We have no idea where people are standing in relationship to each other. To me, I find that very distracting. And
seriously, don't enjoy that at all. The fight scene between Hank and what's his name? What is his name? Was his name?
Wemlinger.
I couldn't even tell who was who.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they do that on purpose just to save on, you know, whatever else they have to, you know, like, they don't have to pay attention to special effects then, I suppose.
You've got body doubles and you've got stump people and, you know, and it's much easier to cover those things up if you can't see very much.
Sure. But to turn all the lights off and then just give everybody like a handy cam and say, here, just GoPro, you know, just film this on GoPro in the dark. Yeah, that'll happen.
I will give them that scene at least. Was taking place in a back alley, so minimal light. I will forgive them there. There are some other places where it suddenly becomes darker than you would expect it to be.
Right, like an office at night.
Yes.
When people are actually working.
Right.
Yeah. This whole season, I hope they lighten up a season later if they have a chance. You know, they probably already shot all these episodes, but still.
Several of them, anyway. Yeah, they've got to be. This next week, they're having a big celebration out on the set, celebrating the 100th episode.
Okay.
Be cool if we lived close to Portland to take part in that. Unfortunately, I can't make it there that fast with no fundage. Yep.
That's right. We'll have to watch from the safety of our own well-lit homes. How's that?
Yeah, no body doubles for us.
Nope, that's right. Well, with that, are we ready to wrap this up?
Yeah, you want to talk about what you want to speculate what you think might happen next week?
Oh, speculations.
I mean, yeah, we both saw the trailers.
Right.
You saw the promo for next week?
Let me think. Remind me, because I did see it.
Well, and see, they gave it away in the promos, but they've also were saying before the season even started that Rosalie was going to be kidnapped this season.
Oh, right. Yes, yes. And so it will happen next week. Yeah.
Or maybe.
I understand it's kind of a Peter Pan episode.
Ah, I didn't
so it's,
see that.
You know, they've found their new Wendy.
Oh, no. Oh, right. This is the Lost Boy episode.
Uh-huh. So that could be pretty interesting. I'm sure Monroe will get to show his angry side. We don't see him very often, but, you know, he needs an outlet for that.
Yes, he does, because being a blue bud and a vegetarian blue bud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he needs his moment here. I think that sometime this season, I don't know for sure, but I would love to see Sergeant Wu make detective and become part of a team. And maybe even Nick will head up a special force. Who knows?
Maybe they'll start a Vessin unit.
Mm-hmm.
Just specifically for
right.
Vessin suspected crimes.
Top secret
then,
Vessin unit.
Yeah, yeah. And then everybody in that unit has to be on the up and up and know about Vessin. That'd
right.
be interesting. I wonder mm-hmm. if there are any other Vessin police officers.
Mm, good question. We know they exist in the FBI.
Yeah, or did.
Mm-hmm. I think there's more than just her.
Well, there was the guy that Trouble decapitated in
right.
Nick's house.
Right.
He was Vessin. Quintiager.
Yeah, that's right. Weston Stewart, is that his name?
Yes.
Something
yes.
like that. Yeah, this will be interesting to see how Portland Police Department deals with, wow, I don't think I'd want to live in Portland.
No, me either.
They're going to need more people on that staff.
Honey, let's move to the epicenter of the Vessin Uprising. Yay!
We are so there.
The other thing that I want to see, and they just about have to, is they're going to have to bring back Baby Diana.
Yeah.
We've been seeing Meisner a couple of times each episode now,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
he's the last one that we saw her with. He was, you know, he basically rescued her in the helicopter,
mm-hmm.
and we haven't even seen a glimpse of her. So,
right. Yeah.
I know we're only
Kelly
two episodes.
Right.
Yeah, I know we're only two episodes in, but still.
You know, I read an interesting theory about Kelly's death scene, you know, with the head in the box thing.
Yeah.
And one of them was, what if Diana had created an illusion that one of the people who invaded Nick's house looked like Kelly and was killed as Kelly, and that head was in the box?
And Kelly was somewhere else altogether.
And Kelly was safe with Diana.
Oh, that's possible.
I still
contend that it is totally out of character for Kelly Burkhart to have walked into that house,
mm-hmm. right,
without doing some sort of due diligence background check and, you know,
yeah,
a cursory look around the house.
Yeah.
And she's a Grimm. Yeah. She would be able to. I think she would have known that there were people waiting in the shadows, basically.
I would hope so. I mean, there were three houses around Nick's that had all been invaded by people who were waiting and watching.
Yep.
So, you know, it
killing.
Was... Yeah, killing the neighbors and whatnot. I don't know. I think it was out of character for her, too. Although, you have to kind of wonder now, seeing some of these other holes that they've left, was it just an oversight on the writer's part? Was it just kind of a... Oh, let's have Kelly get killed here, you know, without thinking about what her character would do.
Yeah, but not only her character, what about Baby Diana? I mean,
exactly.
That little baby has been protecting herself and those around her
mm-hmm.
since before she was born.
That's right. So where was she that night? Mm-hmm.
For her to sit calmly in the middle of the floor
right.
while the caretaker that she knows, the mm-hmm. basically the only person that has been taking care of her.
Uh-huh.
Is brutally murdered right outside the door.
Right.
Yeah, I don't buy it. Yeah.
Okay.
And we should probably leave it with that.
Yes, we'll leave it with that. So.
Okay, I'm going to let you do the sign off here.
Hey, thanks for tuning in this week. We've had fun recapping this episode. We'll be back next week with another one. I'd like to invite you to view all of the recaps and articles that Sci-Fi for Me has to offer. This has been a part of Sci-Fi for Chicks at scififorme.com. You can email us at that address. You can call the hotline, and that number is 573-427-2434. That's 573-42-SCI-FI. On Twitter, you can find us at @SciFiForChicks. subscribe to Sci-Fi for Chicks on iTunes or podcast platform of your choice. And again, Maya and I also contribute to a couple of other programs. I recap The Librarians, where I might actually feature your tweets if you tweet during the show. And Maya recaps these grim episodes in writing as well. And we also both sit on the Level 117 podcast each week as we talk about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Universes on sci-fi4me.com. So we'd love to have you come back next week. I do want to put a plug in for the conventions and events section on the website. We have close to 500 conventions and meetings of all sorts and shapes and sizes in this genre, both sci-fi and fantasy genre and comic books. So we feature the weather for those
Where the convention's being held.
Yeah, where the thank you.
You're welcome.
So, you know, it's a great resource. Check it out, sci-fi4me.com. Till next week, we'll say
we'll be back with more grimly speaking.
Exactly.
We should end with a growl. Rawr!
This has been a presentation of sci-fi4me.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media. This is Sci-Fi for Me Radio.